Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. With summer camps for pre-K through high school, offering skills in sports, music, and more. luther.edu/summer-camps. Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
Every so often, violence in the occupied territories claims a most unlikely victim. It happened in 1992 when the American archaeologist Albert Glock was murdered. To this day, the assassination remains a mystery, though there are plenty of theories on why both Israelis and Palestinians wanted to get rid of him. Journalist Edward Fox tells the story in his book Sacred Geography, and in the process, he delves into the contentious world of biblical archaeology. Fox told Anne Strange Shamps that Glock first went to the Holy Land because of his own religious beliefs.
Albert Glock emerged from a very conservative Lutheran community in the Midwest. And in that very enclosed world, he was taught a worldview of absolute certainties, all emanating from the text of the Bible. And this guided his life very strictly, about the first 50 years of his life, really. He was a brilliant scholar, Hebrew scholar, and naturally gravitated towards doing biblical archaeology. Archaeology was a branch of biblical studies. But he had the courage to rethink all of those cast iron assumptions and really start doing archaeology in the Holy Land from scratch, really based on a maverick streak in his nature, a tendency to support the underdog, which, you know, in the Holy Land and in the Arab-Israeli conflict is the Palestinians. He had an emotional appetite to take the losing side.
So he was started out as a devout Christian, devout enough to become a minister, and this fueled his early involvement in biblical archaeology. But then something happened, and he began to question some of his most basic assumptions.
He just began to see that there were Palestinians around him and that they lived there and that there really were Palestinian people, and that he could see that there had been continuous settlement at places like the village that he excavated at Ta'anik, you know, for 5,000 years, and that was an ancient history. And he thought that was a history that hadn't been written. That really drove him, you know, on a day-to-day basis to get up and, you know, go to work in a underfunded university with students that were liable to be missing classes because they were being arrested or in demonstrations and getting shot and that sort of thing. I think the adversity really kept him going.
So was he defending a particular interpretation of biblical history?
He was saying, let's move on from biblical history. He was saying, you know, the biblical period is a very small segment of the entire history of, you know, what do you want to call it? Southern Syria, the Levant, geographical Palestine, whatever you want to call it, the Holy Land. He was interested in everyday life. He was interested in how ordinary people in villages lived. He was interested in how common domestic pots were made, not the grand narrative that the Bible tells us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did this put him at odds with other scholars?
If you just look into this matter, you can see that it's possible to get beyond simplistic notions of the archaeology of the Holy Land. For instance, to say, as an Israeli might do, the Bible says we were here first, or as a Palestinian nationalist would say, we're the descendants of the Canaanites, so we were here first. The Canaanites being the, you know, the indigenous peoples that, according to the book of Joshua, the Israelites defeated with divine assistance. I mean, I'm arguing in this book that in a rational world, we should get beyond those simplistic, popular, and very secondhand notions of the history of that country, you know?
So this is not the sort of thing that biblical archaeologists themselves argue about, the Arab and Jewish roots in the Holy Land? This is not an issue for archaeologists?
Well, it takes as his starting point the belief, you know, in faith that the text of the Bible is, you know, true in all matters, including historically. So, you know, the five books of Moses were written by Moses, not by unknown authors. And that, you know, the conquest of Joshua took place, the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, and so on. They believe that that's history. I said in the book that that view, the view of the popular biblical archaeologist, is the last part still standing of the edifice of a medieval theological worldview.
So Albert Glock, it sounds like, went out to Palestine and to Israel as a biblical archaeologist, assuming that what was written in the Bible was true,
Sure. Yeah, he did. He did, yes. And he wrote, you know, little articles for his church newspaper saying just that, yeah.
But then he moved on.
Then he was radicalized. I mean, it was a fairly gradual process.
How was he regarded in Palestine and at the university when he was working there?
I think he was mostly thought of as rather aloof. He didn't think that the work of the institute, of his institute, should be publicized. He didn't want to be creating yet another nationalistic archaeology. You know, there are a lot of Palestinians now that like this alternative to the Israeli view of the ancient history of the Holy Land that, you know, emphasizes the Canaanites and sees themselves as the successors of the Canaanites. I mean, that's just as intellectually bogus, you know. So he tried to keep the work of the Institute quite quiet, and I think that aroused a certain amount of suspicion of him.
What did people suspect him of?
Any American who's in an Arab society for any length of time is at one point or another accused of being a CIA spy. You know, I mean, in my travels in Arab countries, I think that's, people have said that to me once or twice. You know, it's just, it goes with the territory.
But there were sort of popular suspicions beginning to arise about him.
In the last months of his life, there was what you might call a hiring dispute at the university. One of his graduate students wanted a permanent job in the institute, and Glock didn't want to give him one because he was inflexible about maintaining his own very high standards of scholarship and wouldn't relax them, which was perhaps inappropriate, you know, in that setting. I mean, this was during the latter days of the Intifada when Palestinians were very much caught up in this idea of we are going to make our own state, our own Palestinian society with our own Palestinian people, and foreigners are standing in the way of doing that. And Glock didn't really have his ear to the ground enough to notice how strong that feeling was, and yet persisted in maintaining a hard line on this hiring dispute. And it all spilled in at a very political university, Beer's Eight. This thing assumed a momentum that he couldn't really do anything about. I mean, there started to be demonstrations against him, and it became quite nasty.
It's a sad story because he came to see himself as having thrown in his lot with the Palestinians, and yet here, his neighbors and colleagues, you know, wound up not regarding him as one of them.
No, that is. It's incredibly sad. You know, that's literally tragic.
Well, so what actually happened to Albert Glock on January 19th, 1992?
Albert Glock and his wife, Lois, lived in what's now part of the urban sprawl around Jerusalem, a village called Beit Hanina. Drove from Jerusalem through Beit Hanina, through Ramallah, and down to his office in a house in the village of Beer's Eight. When he was finished and was on his way home, but stopped off at the house of his teaching assistant, he was just going to deliver a message and then continue home. And he parked his VW van and walked down the sloping driveway to the front door of the house. And when he was down there below the level of the road, a car stopped on the road above. A young man with a Palestinian headscarf wrapped around his face jumped down into the little garden near the front door and shot Glock 3 times. Glock fell forward and was dead.
Who exactly murdered Albert Glock remains officially a mystery. Many Palestinians believe an Israeli hit squad did it because of Glock's sympathy for the Palestinians. They point out that the Israeli police took several hours to get to the crime scene, which is by Israeli standards an eternity. But Edward Fox thinks it's more likely a renegade member of Hamas was the assassin. Fox came across an Israeli transcript of an interview with a Palestinian who was arrested and, while being tortured, mentioned that Hamas had killed the doctor at Beer Zeit. The only doctor there was Albert Glock. Edward Fox is the author of Sacred Geography. He talked with Anne Strangechamps.